Okay, you are on the air.
Okay, we're out of executive session, and what am I supposed to say, Jerry?
You just said we're out of executive session.
And nothing we did, no action was taken.
No action was taken.
Okay. Okay, we're item number. We've got a new item, a resolution we'd like to consider, and I'll let Russell introduce it.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'll move resolution number G14-13, resolution of the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority authorizing the waiver of conditions to the purchase of Spectrum Alaska LLC.
Second.
Ted, would you speak to the resolution, please?
Yes, for the record, Chair, we are asking for a waiver of Section 3.3 of the member purchase agreement that we had in purchasing the pad from Spectrum, and would recommend that it is waived so we can move forward with purchasing the pad, which will allow us to move forward with our permitting process and moving forward to get the gravel pad needed for the IEP project.
Is there any questions from Ted?
You're actually pursuing the LLC.
The LLC. Yes.
Okay. And we've done our due diligence as far as any issues with the LLC. There's no pending.
We did that before you signed the agreement to purchase it.
Okay. And there have been no changes.
All right. All right, there's a motion before us. Yes.
Mr. Wilkins.
Aye.
Ms. Nygaard.
Aye.
Mr. Hughes.
Aye.
Commissioner Bell.
Yes.
Mr. Day.
Yes.
Mr. Cruz.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Next on our agenda is item C, Endeavor Rig Jackup Rig Update.
Yes, Chair. We've had a flurry of activity with the rig over the last week, and I gave you a status update last night, and I would request that the board allow Jim Hemsup to come up and give you a quick briefing on the board and answer any questions. And again, if the questions delve into the bankruptcy and certain actions that we're taking, we may have to go into executive session to discuss those. There could be legal reasons, but Jerry's here and we'll be able to.
I doubt that there's anything too sensitive so far that we've done to discuss that.
Right. But okay. I'm just saying if there's a warning, if you see Jerry jump, we'll know. But
well, why don't we have both Jim and Jerry come up?
That would be fine, Chair.
Thank you.
I'm going to sit here so I can stare at Ted so he can make the face at me and tells me I need to be quiet.
No, well, we can't really see it. We like you at the end. So you can see us.
When
we make the face at you.
Yeah. That would be Jerry that would be making that face.
It's my fear.
Thank you, Chair.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for the record, this is Jim Hemsath, Deputy Director. This past Saturday, May 31st, just prior to midnight, Buccaneer Fire Chapter 11 for reorganization. In their plan, the majority of that reason, the filing, the day of the filing, was to prevent 100% of their funds from their Kenai Loop Road to go into an escrow account as required by AOGCC. So that was their purpose of filing. In that filing, one of the initial things is they would like to reject, or if you will, be released from the charter agreement, which KOV has with Kenai Drilling, a Buccaneer energy subsidiary, to lease the rig for 5 years. It is in the process of engaging bankruptcy counsel in Texas. KOV and ASEAN are doing the same. In fact, have an attorney and a bankruptcy counsel attending, I think, a meeting today on the first issues of the hearing to make sure that KOV's rights are being maintained during the course of the bankruptcy.
Hey Jim, just real quickly. So we're hiring the KOV attorney, or are the owners? I mean, to me, there could be a whole bunch of different directions going. Each individual owner could have their own sensitivity, plus, which is different.
Yes.
From KOV.
The recommendation is actually there will be, from a KOV perspective, if you will, there will be three representatives, one watching ADA, one watching Ezion and Terrace, and one watching KOV.
Okay.
That because everyone has slightly different areas they're concerned about, the recommendation that Jerry and Dennis Fennerty is from our perspective, we make sure we have ours, and we made that same recommendation to Ezion as both the manager of KOV and as Ezion to do the same.
So, Chair, the answer is yes, we will have our own attorney representing us.
And KOV will have his own attorney.
And KOV will
have to get approval through the Department of Law for that to happen, and I'm working on it. To get somebody in Texas to do it is what we need. So.
The as you said, the probably one of the major components of this filing is the release of the charter. This is actually the positive thing about this. Buccaneer has had problems with financing. They haven't been out drilling. It is our conclusion at this point, and actually slightly before this point, that it's to our best advantage if we could get a new rig manager that would be able to manage both the rig and to market the rig in Cook Inlet. We've also been approached over the last couple of months by two parties that would like to do just that. So there is an interest in doing that, and both these parties feel there is activity in Cook Inlet that the rig would be leased for, because their proposals that they've kind of come up are based on getting percentages of what things are being leased for from the drilling. It's also important to note that in earlier this year, Buccaneer sold their share of KOV, as well, their common membership share of KOV, to Ezion. So Buccaneer has no legal standing with KOV and subsequently with the rig. So the rig is entirely, it's the wrong word, Jerry, but I apologize, it's unencumbered by Buccaneer. In other words, the rig is the rig. Whether things that there is the aspect of KOV as part of the bankruptcy, making a claim for past due charter payments and even future charter payments, and the documentation has indicated that's a 30-day period. So from a KOV perspective, KOV needs to hustle on that. They want to make a claim for lost past charters and or future charters under the agreement.
Jim, you mentioned, just real quick for Roy, you mentioned that there's two prospective companies interested in operating and managing the rig?
Yes.
And so is it safe to say that the due diligence that KOB does will be different than what they did with Buccaneer before, so that we don't get into this situation again?
Yes.
I would like,
if I could follow up, and Ted will help me out here too, is that it's a different deal. The aspect on the whole project to begin with was Buccaneer being one part owner in the rig as a common membership and responsible for making payments past what was required from ADAs and the banks, which they did do during the refurbishment. The other part of that deal was Buccaneer was coming in with leases that were real leases that had very good prospects in Cook Inlet in terms of delivery. So it was appropriate at the time and how that was done. But what's different going forward at this point is that the rig managers that we're looking at are independent of leases. In other words, they're looking to hire the rig out to people with leases as opposed to a lease owner coming in with a rig, which is essentially what had happened.
And do these folks, these new companies, have interest in an equity position?
One of them does, yes.
Would they be interested in ADA's position?
At the point in time, what they are interested in is purchasing half of the common interest back from Ezion.
And why wouldn't we consider looking at selling our interest?
We just simply haven't gotten that where it placed in the deal.
Is that a possibility?
Always a possibility.
Okay.
Yes, it's a possibility. Just leave it at that.
Okay. Ted, have you guys considered that?
We would be talking to Ezion. One of the things, Chair, to remember as you're looking at that, and it would be a point for whoever's coming in, is that we have a preferred interest in the rig, which is a passive interest in the rig per se as an investment, whereas if they're looking for a common owner interest in the rig, that would be with Ezion. So it'd be dependent, and we will check with what type of interest this company would be interested in. And then we're going to have to balance that also with our agreements of wanting the rig to stay in Alaska, so that that can be...
Because that was basically the condition of our preferred ownership, is this rig be used in Cook Inlet, if not in Cook, in Alaska. So if we were to give up our preferred membership, then there would be no reason other than business reasons, if there was business here, for someone to take that rig outside.
Mark, you have to ask. Yeah, Mark, Chair, could I?
The preferred interest, the sale of that triggers a bunch of legal parameters. What the board's on there.
Well, and Jerry could
answer. Yeah, there are a bunch of issues.
It's also important to know at this point that Spartan is the current rig owner, or excuse me, rig operator, too many O words. They are operating the rig on behalf of Kenai Drilling, Buccaneer, and have been maintaining the rig in Port Grant. They have not been doing any work because there's not been funds, but basically the lights have been on versus cold, dark, and unoccupied.
Port Grant, you can't even drive to Port Grant, can you? You got to fly there at Homer?
Well, I haven't been there, and I have to find that out, yes. Yeah. But that's exactly right.
Absolutely.
It's on the other side. And
you can
float there.
Absolutely.
It's an ice-free port that you can park your rig in the winter.
And
where rigs are parked.
And the Spartan, the previous Spartan 128 has done work there. Other work's been done there. A little less problematic than being in Homer.
Or Seward.
Well, it's closer. Seward's way away. Seward actually would like to have the rig there. But it's a bit of a haul. But more importantly, Spartan has indicated to Ezion, his manager of KOV, that they will stay on board during this time on good faith that they would get paid at the end of the day, but they won't simply walk off the rig. The release or rejection of the charter is retroactive to March 31st. May 31st, other M word. So presumably if that happened in the next couple of weeks, then literally Spartan could, in fact, would most likely walk off the rig. But they've indicated they will not do that.
And Jim, then there would be a legal obligation for Ezion to keep someone on the...
In the meantime, Ezion, as manager of the rig, is negotiating a short-term contract with Spartan to be the operator of the rig in the interim. And that's a short-term operation agreement, and we didn't want them to get that tied up with possibly a longer-term operational agreement going forward. So they'll be looking at two different things, and the most important one, as we expressed last night to Ezion, that the short-term is most important. They understand that in their negotiations right now. So I would expect within a week that there will be an agreement with a contract signed with Ezion on behalf of KOV and SPART to maintain the rig.
And Ezion has a legal responsibility to keep the rig up to date, pay the expenses for the rig, and...
Per the operating agreement, the common members have all responsibility related to cost to maintain and upgrade if necessary, if there was a code change, anything required on the rig, and to maintain class. Which is important because we've also had indications in some of these conversations that I have not been able to confirm. We have calls in to Spartan that there's potentially 3 or 4 months worth of refurbishment and class work need to be done before the rig can get out. Work that typically would have been done over the winter.
And we're just finding this out. And were you under the assumption the work was being done through the winter?
The original plan was for the work to be done during the winter. I was not on the assumption that work was actually being done in the winter, because Buccaneer did not have the finances at that point to do the work. But Buccaneer, as K&I Drilling, does have the responsibility, did have the responsibility on the charter to maintain the rig under their watch. And until such point as we either declare default on the contract or an event like this occurred, there wasn't much that we could do at that point. They're responsible under the contract to pay us, and I would also say at this point, for whatever it's worth, we are in fact current on our dividends, but they're under obligation to make the day rate payment as a 5-year, 365-day-a-year contract. So the rig essentially was leased to Buccaneer
We are keeping watch on how it's being used and where its permitting is. We're understanding from, basically it's been February on, because there was a fair amount of work with Buccaneers selling off some of the assets, selling out their ownership to Ezion, selling the 25% of the Cosmopolitan lease to Blue Crest, that they were generating funds sufficient to get them up and operating. But they were actually generating funds sufficient to get up and paying other bills.
You mentioned, you guys jump in here if you want to, but you mentioned 3 to 4 months of maintenance and up repair to get the rig back into to some condition that you mentioned, some status. So does that eliminate the season's drilling?
Not necessarily, and that's the aspect of, well, two things here is one, there's only one, right now, one interested party to do drilling, which is Blue Crest, which is notionally a 50-day drilling period that they were planning on at the end of the summer, the September-October time frame. So as this is going forward, that timing on that work is important. When I was in Singapore last week, before this claim was filed, we were already having discussions related to, we had all heard, again, we're hearing it from, quite frankly, people like Blue Crest, because Buccaneer at this point was not answering phones, emails, or certified letters. So we thought there might be a problem coming up. We were looking at possibly a new rig operator and putting that rig in shape so we could at least assure some aspect of drilling the season, considering that the first point of drilling the season was to be Buccaneers drilling of the deep Tionic prospect in the Farmer and ConocoPhillips, which was a 120-day project in itself. Their indications in February, March, were that they wanted to have that rig out in June, but financing didn't take place. So, as I said, the Blue Crest is I'm sorry, Gary.
So, this project was about halfway done when I think Susan and I got on the board, on the new ADA board. I think that's one of the ones. And this was sort of a rock star, and everybody was concerned, but we were and still are protected. So I just have to ask, when I compare this 300-foot rig ice pool that's gone belly up with others that may have brought in a 150-foot rig under clouded circumstances at best. What happened to this deal? Where did this belong, and how does the competition claim success, and we're talking about bankruptcy?
Two reasons, I think, a couple things. First is that the rig that was selected was a purposefully a much larger rig than the rig that the competition was using in the inlet. It was for deeper waters, it could reach deeper parts of Cook Inlet and possibly even use the outer continental shelf. The project proponent, Buccaneer, when they were selecting that rig and recommending that rig, had envisioned that kind of a broader use of that rig in Alaska, which made complete sense to us. The Spartan rig, much smaller, much lighter, but very much fit for purpose for where it was being used. Not a whole lot else, but very fit for purpose. The difference is, so that's just the difference in choice. The rig that was purchased from Transocean required substantially more refurbishment work than was initially anticipated under an inspection.
That's our rig.
That's right. Okay. It was the Adriatic 11, now the Endeavor. Endeavor, the Spirit of Alaska, to be exactly correct.
Spirit of Independence.
Yeah, both Russell and Crystal and I weren't here for all of this. So just before you go on, I got a real quick question. Did any red flag pop up when it was portrayed to Ada that the rig was going to cost X to refurbish, and they purchased it, but it really cost Y? I mean, that to me is the big first red flag that tells you that something isn't right at the farm. Because it was a big difference, if I remember right. Was it
about 20 million? No, about 20 million.
$20 million difference or something?
Yeah.
So, was Buccaneer involved with that rig assessment? A third party? What? Where were we at? What was the story on that?
Buccaneer was involved. Buccaneer did make the selection. The partial of the deal was they could inspect the rig in cold condition only in Malaysia, so no power. But having said that, we contracted with DNV to do a third-party inspection of the rig as well. Again, under relatively limited conditions, not in the shipyard. And the answer back, as well as what was on the open market and other appraisals we had done on the rig, just as it stood on paper in terms of its size, was that this rig was still a fit rig and could be refurbished. Yes, there could be problems with cost. Any estimates, problem with cost until you start getting into the gear, discovering electronics weren't what they were supposed to be because they weren't stored rightly. But under that particular time, at that expense, two things happened. One is OCBC, the main debt came on with an additional $10 million of debt, $10 million in a loan going from $56 million to $66 million. And Ezion and Buccaneer came up with the remainder of the funds. The rig was, in fact, one of the better yards in the world, the Keppel-Feld shipyard, where it was in a complete dry dock condition. So, yeah, it did cost more. We also had a second appraisal. Actually, the bank required a second appraisal, and that appraisal came in at a value of $127 million as a Singapore-based rig under conditions being refurbished. And the refurbished costs at that point were estimated to be at $104 million. So simply from a value perspective, it was still on a price and condition that made sense. ADA's funds never went up. What happens in that particular thing is that it simply required a higher day rate to be charged for the rig that Buccaneer as a driller would pay and accommodate its through its financing that way. So it was not a red flag that there was more work than anticipated. The red flag really where things started to come undone was when it reached Homer, and the work that was shown to be complete, was documented to be complete, quite frankly, as I walked the rig in July, looked complete, and then when it got to Homer and the additional ABS, they started to test out systems that weren't working, they were undercovering things that were, in fact, not done correctly, that were hidden, that were tucked away under trays that required for a much more aggressive refurbishment, not the least of which was a defective lifeboat covered under warranty, but it chewed up time. And so ultimately they're getting into the inlet later. They moved off of what their programmatic drill site would have been, say, Southern Cross, the Southern Cross lease, and went to work on the Cosmopolitan lease. The Cosmopolitan lease had tremendous results in terms of both gas and oil plays. So the decision to do that was a good decision because they proved a play that's quickly developed. They moved to their second site last summer, put legs down, set up to drill. The current undercut the legs, which is a problem with any jackup rig in Cook Inlet. Rightly so, they lifted legs, floated the vessel, went to move to a different location, did all the appropriate side sonar and things like that. By that time, they felt that they were in a place where they could not get sufficient work done by the end of the drilling season and went to shortage to work, at which point they lost the lease with DNR.
And
I just heard the answer to my question. You bought a Cadillac that needed repair. It wasn't suited for the Cook Inlet.
I didn't say it wasn't suited. It's actually
suited for the Cook Inlet. Okay.
No, I didn't mean to imply that either, Gary.
Okay.
What I meant to say is a rig that could reach all areas of Cook Inlet as well as Alaska. There are deeper areas for drill and abandonment work that's still under code, ConocoPhillips, other people have to do that. There's a lot of work there. Can't be reached by a rig with the 70-foot depth that needs a 300-foot
You're talking about Chukchi Sea.
Yeah. Well, no, even in Cook Inlet. Even in Cook Inlet.
What I heard is we bought a Cadillac.
Yes.
That was broken. We didn't know. That required money to fix.
Yes.
So that's one problem why this thing went south?
I would, please. If I could say, Gary, I don't think that you're saying a Cadillac. Mm-hmm. I think we bought a rig that's functional in all areas of Cook Inlet. It's not a Cadillac, it was a rig that can be utilized for all areas in the Cook Inlet, which when the board was going through this process, was important to the board that we have a rig that has the ability at the time to reach all the type of leases that would need to be explored in the Cook Inlet. And also a benefit was that at the time when the board was looking at it, is that there was a need, if Chuck Cheese went forward, to be able to have
a relief rig.
A relief rig that could be in the area to allow Exxon or Shell.
Shell or ConocoPhillips.
ConocoPhillips to move forward.
The other thing, Gary, just on that, the thing is that you may not, and you weren't, one of the aspects of this rig, this is a rig that was originally designed for the North Sea. So, ice isn't quite the right word, but it is low-impact, cold-temperature steel. It's designed and structurally designed to be able to handle pretty aggressive wave conditions and impact conditions under low temperatures.
So I'm trying to get the comparison on why our project, we're talking bankruptcy, and the other project was tracking parallel to ours, is claiming success. What's the difference?
I would say, of course, Gary, if I could, is it's not, these aren't comparable projects. We brought a rig up that could be utilized by different owners of leases. The Fury brought up a rig to drill on their project. Fury is a, what would you call it,
an operator.
They're developing their leases, the kitchen sink. So that rig really isn't there to be leased out right now to everyone.
Is it more of a workover rig?
No. It was leased specifically for Fury. The aspect of leases. From ADA's perspective was bringing in a rig that could be used by other explorers, basically matching some of the state legislature. But I think, Gary, probably the biggest difference is obviously that the folks at Fury were better financed than the folks at Buccaneer to do the development work. That's long and short of it.
Susan?
Look, I was going to say that I think we knew from the very beginning that Buccaneer's cash flow was going to be that tax credit. And so some of the things that were put in place, you know, the $23 million that ADA put in, Jim said this, as the repair costs increased, Ezion and OCB and others came in, we were firm. But we knew that vulnerability from the beginning. It was a small company, and again, the then fairly recent tax credits were going to be how they were going to get into this. But I think that we were, you know, in addition to being clear about what our investment was going to be and what else we were leveraging through this, I think we had our eyes pretty wide open as we were thinking, okay, we were thinking about the exit from the beginning, from the time, you know, was it 7 years? We were thinking about the versatility of the rig, because even as we mapped out what Buccaneer was going to do, this rig always had to have other clients in order for the operating and for the bareboat charter to work. And then also, you know, the information the board got about the value of the rig. If the operating plan never happened and we came to a situation that we're in now, what's the resale value of the rig? What's the, you know, so I think that it has, when they lost time at several different key points and lost, you know, we already knew that they were vulnerable to undercapitalized, but those were pretty critical kind of nails, I think, in the coffin as we saw a season, and then again a second season where they weren't getting their cash flow. But the work that the staff and the board and our consultant team that supports us, we tried to think through this and be disciplined, going, if the operating plan doesn't go, where are our outs? And reminded of that as you've been giving us, you know, updates even leading to this weekend and early this week about the, you know, where we're at, is that we're working with a small operator and a lot of people have looked at this kind of renaissance in Cook Inlet where it was, you know, pointing to things like the tax credit, pointing to ADA's participation, pointing to, you know, a lot of things on how to get Cook Inlet revitalized. But I think back to the board's work, we tried to have our eyes wide open from the very beginning, and not be have no options if we came to a situation like this.
And I think one of the other things, Chair, is in the environment when the board made their final decision. If you go back and look at the
the report, the due diligence report. It listed all of the type of risk that could be involved in this project, and we saw that. But again, at the point in time when the board was making this decision, and we always will have these in economic development projects, at that time, everyone was worried about gas or lights being turned off in the Cook Inlet. Well, look, and that was before Hillcorp made their announcement that they were purchasing
Chevron,
and that lo and behold, we have now a flood of gas coming in.
So I might say, even on that, Ted, those flood of gas under the contract still in 2018.
But anyway, it's part of when you look out, as we've looked on other projects like the Brooks Range facility, you know, where we projected out what we believe we had in their collateral protection, with knowing that we were going to have a project developer, project sponsor, one of them, that had no large balance sheet to move forward, that we did have for protection another project sponsor that was a partner that does have a large balance sheet to protect if this happens. So as you go through, it was a risk project, as I believe, Commissioner, we had our final vote that I said that I believed it was important for the economy to have this rig here. But these were the risks. So if it goes bad, it'll be Ted Leonard's retirement project.
I'm sorry, Russell.
I think I want to just get back to, and I know Susan laid it out, and Gary, and even for yourself, we were here, and I don't want to rehash kind of the history, because I'm sure it was a great project and the decision was the right one at that point in time. I think for me, it's just more a function of going forward. You talked about kind of the exit strategies we have. I don't know what those are, so I think it would be helpful to actually see that and what that thinking was. And then also, I'd just like to be sure we are thinking longer term whether or not this is an asset we should continue to retain ourselves. And I'd just like to see some thinking around that as we go forward.
If I could speak to that just very briefly. The couple things, as Ted pointed out, with ASEAN is ASEAN has been making all the payments to the bank. So that balance sheet is made so that it never goes into default. The bank's unpaid due is $47 million at that point versus our 28 with the dividends.
Well, we're about 23.6 before we
paid the dividends. Right, that's right. We paid dividend, but the I was going to get the dividend again, Ted. The aspect going forward was always we knew this was not an. Let's see if I get my words correct. We knew this was an infrastructure asset. In other words, it was an asset that we were investing in infrastructure for development in Cook Inlet that could be used. We balanced that idea that someone has to use it a little bit more than build it may ever come, because we had somebody who had actually had the leases to develop. But looking at the sales value, not salvage value, but sales value for this rig and the size versus what the bank's debt and what ADA's debt as the first two tiers were. And we're always balanced in that case and continue to be balanced, that we could sell this rig and exit, and that rig could exit Cook Inlet. So that's the one exit strategy that's right there. The second one going forward is ASEAN continues to make sure the payments are being made to the bank, and will, as we go forward, look at what funding is required to maintain the rig. So having our next strategy is, under the aspects that there seems to be interest in this rig, one customer in particular is begging us not to get rid of this rig, and I've had two other phone calls saying we really could still use that rig in Cook Inlet. Looking at a new manager, because we are with KOB, have that control, that will be able to not tie to any given lease, but tie to market the rig and operate the rig appropriately with the crew that's experienced and business that's experienced in what that rig is going forward. So our next strategy moving forward really is not quite an exit strategy, but one of simply moving ahead with the program as defined. Getting the rig under charter, getting revenues coming in under that rig, starting with the end of the summer, having that rig used in Cook Inlet, getting back our payments in terms of a repurchase of our member obligations and dividends, and moving forward the exit strategy going as we defined in the 5 to 6 year period from where we are now. But the ultimate exit strategy is to sell the rig.
Okay, that
Now, and just real quickly, and I assume the bankruptcy trustee and all the courts, they'll have their flight plan too, which may or may not parallel what you just said, Jim.
We understand. Go ahead, Jerry, please.
The way KOB owns the rig, not Buccaneer. There's no Buccaneer entity in KOB anymore. So as long as that holds through bankruptcy, KOB, Ada and Ezion are in control of the rig and can sell it, and the bankruptcy has no say over that.
Yeah, but they sold it less than 6 months ago, right?
They did, yeah. That was in February. So unless there's going to be a preference claim, which is ordinarily 90 days, and they're just beyond that, I do believe, then... So, I mean, strange things happen in bankruptcy court. So there are, as it stands right now, this is not in bankruptcy. The rig is controlled by KOB, Ezion, and Ada.
Susan, you have something?
I was just going to say, I think that over the course of the next couple of months, though, as we're tracking what's happening with this, it is a good time to look back at that risk analysis and to see if they were appropriately rigorous enough. Mm-hmm. But again, just... You know, recognizing that as people are asking us questions, Buccaneers, understanding the difference between what was outlined today and outlined and the information we got in the last couple of days, that rig ownership is not affected by Buccaneers bankruptcy.
And, Chair,
The rest, did you have something more? Or did you?
No, I think it was just, I understood what you were saying. I just want to make sure that the other part of our exit strategy doesn't get lost in kind of your go-forward strategy, right?
Correct,
and,
I understand.
And Mark came up and talked to the issues of, you know, there are some legal issues with doing something, you know, some other type of exit on this, and I think we should just understand what those are and how you would address those.
What do you anticipate Ada have to spend legally to protect our position? And where do you put it on the operating budget? And what is it, and then based on that, how much? What is it going to do to the projected income statement?
You'll need to see from Jerry.
It's difficult at this point to project, but you know it's not would be unheard of for $100,000 or more in legal fees to be incurred. Just keeping track of what's going on in bankruptcy court.
Per year?
It's hard to say, Dana, because I don't know what all issues are going to be, Ada's going to be involved in.
Can we ask for a budget, a conservative budget, so that we can have it as a line item?
So we can
track that, so we can at least understand what it's costing us to protect our interest.
Sure. The Department of Law is looking at doing a procurement to engage Texas bankruptcy attorney. And that procurement will have as a part of it a dollar amount, not to exceed number, and there'll be an RSA budget number with ADA to finance that.
And that'll come into our regular operating budget. Part of our development cost of running our business.
Would you put those costs that we're incurring on the bankruptcy as a separate line item on updates from Buccaneer?
We can put that for you. Yes, we can.
So, every time we get an update where we're at status on the bankruptcy,
we can give you the report, the cost of that.
How much we spent, how much anticipated.
The other thing, just two other items on there to make sure that everyone is aware of it and understanding that we don't know how things work out in bankruptcy. Ada does, in fact, have a lien through the contract on $3 million of ACES credits, which I understand have been filed, but because of taxpayer confidentiality information, I can't get anything other than that from revenue. And it's also important to note that we have a perfected 3.5% overriding royalty interest on all Alaskan and Texan properties of producing leases of Buccaneer, which right now assumes to be the Kenai Road Loop property in Kenai. Understanding there's a stay and all those kind of other good words, but that already stays with that property, and it would generate, and on the contract they've got today, about $500,000 a year. So
if we get it.
Understand all that. I'm just saying is that it's a properly perfected overriding royalty interest that's part of the property, and if that property is sold under bankruptcy, that ORE still
so
goes
along with it. So are we considered secured creditor then?
Yes.
Okay.
We should be. Strange thing.
Don't start, you're waffling on us, Jerry. Now, come on, either we are or we aren't. That's
you are.
How would you do it?
You are, but at the end of the day, what that means, I'm not sure yet.
Sharon, I would say with that, and one of the things that as you look at where we go on economic development projects, when we did this project, we knew it was an important project. We knew it was a risk project. As we talked about risk capital, this was part of our allocation of we looking at our strategic plan of risk projects that are important to the state at that point in time. And based on that risk project, we had all these waterfalls of protection. One, having common owners that we believe, ASEAN, could protect our interests. We had...
Speaking of ASEAN, just real quick, is there any scenario that we as a second place holder, a second mortgage, would ever have to buy out the first to protect our interest?
We have the option.
Yeah, we have the option. We have the right to.
That we don't have to take it. That was one of the waterfalls.
In other words, if ASEAN decides not to pay anymore, right, the bank wants to foreclose, well, then we'd be forced with the decision to buy out the first.
Correct, the bank.
Well, and again, it's based on the value of the rig and going through that process to ensure that if it's paid off, again,
I just wonder if there's any scenario that you folks see at this time where that could ever be a possibility that we have to go come up $46 or $48 million to get the first.
Only if the board wanted to do that.
No. If ASEAN could pull any trigger, obviously, other than not paying, that would that ever, you don't anticipate that because of their balance sheet and the equity in the rig.
That's correct. Okay. They do have equity in the rig that they would like to get out as well. And if they were to stop paying bank defaults, with the bank and ADA sells the rig for $90 million, we walk away clean, and ASEAN is left with the loss.
And one of the things also, Jerry, you were going to say something about that, didn't you?
There is the lawsuit going on between Archer, the original manager hired to refurbish the rig, and KOB is a member of that lawsuit going on in state court in Texas. That'll be stayed because of the bankruptcy, but depending on how that plays out, Archer could have a large claim against KOB and may take action against the rig if that were to ever happen. That could trigger some default with OCBC or something, but it would depend on a lot of factors that we don't know today. And the Archer,
I'm not familiar with that legal dispute. What is that about?
The work done at Keppel Fells and managed by Archer as the rig manager at the yard brought a rig to Alaska that was non-functioning when it was supposed to be functioning. Buccaneer sued Keppel Fells and Archer. They're now in a lawsuit, or actually the lawsuit may have been brought by Archer because Keppel Fells, or Buccaneer refused to pay Archer for the work because they had paid them for work that wasn't done correctly. They'd settled with Keppel Fells. Keppel Fells folks came across, inspected the rig, came back, and the Keppel Fells aspect went away. But Archer entered a lawsuit for lack of payment from Buccaneer. Buccaneer countersued, saying, "You did crappy work. I'm not paying you twice."
How much was this original suit for?
I don't remember, Dan. I really don't.
It's approximately 20.
Yeah, it's in the 20-ish million range.
But again, on that, ASEAN is responsible for...
Well, KOV is named in the suit. ADA is not. And KOV now is managed by ASEAN. Before it had been ASEAN and Buccaneer. And the contract, the operating agreement, has common members defending and indemnifying. ADA is preferred member.
So are we have the financing in the KOV lawsuit?
No.
For defending?
No.
That's coming out of ASEAN?
Well, it's been what's coming out of Buccaneer.
Now
it'll be ASEAN.
And just real quickly, you are back in Singapore meeting with ASEAN?
Yes.
And so what is their appetite here? Where are they at? What are they feeling? Are they, I mean, are they, what's the, I mean, obviously they're the, they're leading the charge here.
They're
we're relying on their business decisions in the near future.
Interesting enough, there's two things. One is that, and we really had a discussion over the last few months, pretty much bi-weekly with the CEO and I at Ezion about this. And Ezion has always been saying, we've got to, you know, make this project successful, kind of do what we can to help Buccaneer. When I got there last week, we sort of had a discussion and said it's time to pull the trigger before the, because going forward is inappropriate as it stands. They do have an appetite. They want to maintain this rig. They believe in the rig. They understand Cook Inlet and think there's still a value there. The fact that they've been approached with someone who wants to take, basically buy them back out.
Not completely.
Well, if you will. Ezion sold our Buccaneer. Ezion bought 50% of the common ownership from Buccaneer. Did I say that right? They are more than happy to have someone come in and buy that 50% back. And they are looking to pursue that.
Do we have to approve that?
We do.
I wasn't here at the time when you guys were going through this, but did the board have to approve the operator since you were an interested party? Did you have to do your due diligence on the potential operator and give final approval of who would operate it?
It was part of the decision because the operator rig was presumed to be, at the beginning, was Buccaneer. They would manage the rig. They, as the rig manager, they would select an operator.
Right.
And we had a condition subsequent to that to be able to approve the operator of the rig, which was Archer at the time, which doing work in the North Sea, familiar with cold weather,
right,
had done work for other companies, had a good experience record, and had a really sophisticated maintenance program.
But you didn't have to approve the local operator, which was Buccaneer. That's something that
Buccaneer was part of the project sponsor.
Yeah, they were the project proponent, same way, if I could, as Brooks Range. Okay. So we did look at Buccaneer, listed on the stock exchange, what their value was at the time, what their stock was selling at,
what the leases were.
We had independent discussion, look at the leases, give us a value on the lease value and what they would produce. We've had two independent reviews on the rig itself in terms of its value. So,
and we did do due diligence on Ezion to verify the financial strength of them. So that was all part of the process that the board looked at in going forward with this project. And I think the difference was on this project compared to other projects in the past where Ada had problems was that Ada stuck by its waterfall protections and not said, no, we'll forgive this protection, so we'll invest more money into it. Whereas you look at ASI, a Granary, or some of those projects way back in 2000, you know, that we stuck by every protection that we had and said, no, we are not going to invest more in the money. You need to come up with this, or we'll declare a default. So did we know at the time, or the board, I mean, commissioner, can say that Buccaneer was undercapitalized? Yes. But we also knew, and the only reason we moved forward with this was that we had another partner in addition to Buccaneer that was very strongly capitalized. If it was a project with just Buccaneer, we would not move forward with the project.
The key thing at that point was to make sure that the rig got operating in Cook Inlet. And that's where the common members are responsible for all payments outside work. And while Buccaneer was undercapitalized, felt they could get finance, and they did a little bit, it was Ezion that was providing the bulk of the capital to get the rig up and running. Okay. Any other questions?
Board, we will, or Chair, excuse me, but we will continue to keep you updated, and we can put this on a weekly basis of where they're at on the bankruptcy. And
I would say minimum 2 weeks, unless something comes up.
Right.
That's
sort of the same thing we're doing with IEP. If something very important comes up.
So maybe something that we get the heads up before we read it in the paper. That would really help.
We were trying to do that. Hopefully did for what happened.
Yeah.
On this one.
Okay. Thanks, Jim. Thanks, sure. Jerry. Next is director comments, Ted.
Yes, very
reports.
Quickly, we have the. I gave the board report. Any questions on that? I'd be happy to answer. One thing to just talk about how we go forward with items is that I was going to let everyone know is that we did receive a large payment on a past 40 that is with a new loan of $12 million. So actually, projects that we have outstanding right now that are on our books that relate to an ORI or a failed project are now only $9.1 million. So for an economic development authority, we're in a very good place that way.
Okay.
And again, we have the reports on projects, loans, and I'm available to answer any questions that the board may have.
I have a couple of questions. Russell, just the first one on your report. I know we keep, every time I see it, it's kind of the same comment on the comprehensive credit framework and the financial capacity model. Just what's the timeline on getting that completed?
The timeline is, I have Michael there, but I can answer it. We're hoping into the middle of June and July. It's one that, again, we're planning to build that in as we go forward with the budgeting process of saying what capacity we need to have, and that will be part of that.
Okay.
So, they're making great progress on the model that we have on projecting how much cash is coming in, and it's coming together, and our goal is to have it done this summer sometime.
Excellent. Look forward to seeing it.
Go ahead.
Just a couple of smaller ones. I was just on your project matrix. I'm just curious as to when you start putting some of these other projects on there. I was just going through this one back here, your active projects, and then you've got the prospective projects. So you've got Ambler, UCOR, Agrium, Heatherdale. When do you start including those projects in your matrix? So we kind of see what the status is.
Heatherdale's there, Agrium.
Oh, I was looking at this one here, sorry, in the book.
That is one that our project development team put together on what they're doing. It's not an overall process.
Right.
The one that, so I thought you were talking about the project matrix.
No. I'm over 40 now, so I can read that thing.
Ted, that list pretty much starts with some kind of a reimbursement agreement being signed by the board. That's what goes on our list. Things that we've got board approval to work on.
Right. Okay. So these are active. This is the one that the project, this one sort of is in back of this one.
Okay.
This is truly active projects. This one is we're at in the process that potential projects we have are at.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
And if there's more that you want on that, we can.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's there. So. Just the last thing, and it gets back to the public comments that were made today. I mean, I'd like to request this, okay, maybe at the June 26th board meeting, we have a more in-depth briefing on Ambler. And kind of the community outreach strategy and kind of where we're at and how we're going to move forward with that.
I mentioned that to Mark already. And I think what I would like to say on that and definitely get the board's direction is it's still going to be an overview thing of what our communication strategy, where we're going. We're not in the point until we start going down the process more to say that these people were, here's the route.
Yeah, okay. I would just Jeremy, we sat through this on the AEA side.
Mm-hmm.
This is sitting in the Watonna, and it took a lot of time to get through those issues, and as you well know, and I just want to make sure we have to spend a lot of time up front thinking about that outreach.
Oh, and we agree.
Don't estimate the resources that you're going to need.
Yeah.
I guess that's the message I would say.
Well, and again, where we are at in that process is that the legislature gave us monies to go through this pre-development side, which includes the environmental impact statement. Mm-hmm. This is strictly monies that the legislature has given us to move forward with that process. So we are, again, this is a long-term infrastructure project where we're in the pre-development side of this.
I didn't know some of the people giving public testimony really understood what that meant.
Yeah. And
I think we're in the development side.
Yeah. Right.
And you know, doing alignments already.
Again, and the part of that is what position they're taking and where they're at. And we've been trying very clearly to say that we're in this pre-feasibility. Well, Mark can come up.
We're well aware of that comment. And on June 25th, right before the board meeting, we're going to give what we call an EIS primer up in Kalispell, because we are shifting the EIS process. And it's clear, and John just came back from one of the villages, that you know, there's not a term that everybody in the public anywhere knows. So we're going to start explaining that process. And one of the parts of the EIS is a no-build option, as the Corps says. Mm-hmm. So you know, that'll be right in there. Don't build it. So, we've put up a website that goes through the EIS process, which I don't think a lot of those people have had an opportunity yet to look at, because we just posted it. But we are shifting toward an EIS primer. We're also going to do that on the eastern side. The comments were coming from the eastern side, so we're going to do the eastern side too.
Okay. And one of the things that we can say in there is the thing to remind these people is that it's not true that the board does not have to take their opinions into account, because before ADA could move forward with a project like this, you have to have the approval of the Northwest Arctic Borough, which has a portion of this in it. And then in the unorganized area, based on our statute, the governor will have to pick a committee to give advice to the board before we can issue any bonds or debt for this project. In an unorganized area, the governor has to set up a committee that will be advising the board. That's ADA cannot go forward and put a project in an unorganized area without that committee being involved with ADA.
And we will work closely with the Department of Commerce, Commissioner Bell, because the unorganized borough is also under the Department of Commerce. And so the way we've done research on that statute, we think it's kind of a joint effort between the governor's appointees and the program counselors.
Okay. Any more information? So the Cal-Am Investment Measure Service, that's in front of us, and there's a statement that may be viewed in your office, Ted, item number four. Okay.
Thank
you. Yes. Anything else on your comments?
No, Chair.
Okay, a couple things here. Obviously, the next regular board meeting will be Thursday, the 26th. It's going to be immediately following the Russell Dick Show.
What?
AEA board meeting. It's the Russell Dick Show. I just thought I'd throw that little light humor in there. Following the AEA board meeting, I've got a couple comments, and I don't know if any of the other board members will do. First, I'd like to thank, they're not here, the MWH people and the Kiewit people, and I'm very sensitive that what their CEO said about, you know, every dollar they've spent so far is coming out of their pocket, and their pot of gold is if we get to the finish line. I think that makes them hungry, but I also think we need to have our guard up a little bit to make sure that they don't get the finish line just to get to the finish line, right? So we have to be a little careful about that. I would also like to ask Ted and his executive staff, as these projects go on, especially the IEP, you know, when board members ask for information and questions and stuff, if you can't get back to them immediately with it. I'd like to see a time frame for the response. In other words, you know, board member Wilkin here, and I haven't talked to him about this, but you know, he had some questions and whatnot, and I don't know if he ever got referred back to, well, we can get to these questions if when or here or here's a problem or what. I think that's important. I look forward to his questions because it actually helps me with more questions. Mm-hmm. And then I look forward to the responses. And so that goes for everybody here. But I really do think it would be important that if a board member does have a question, if you can't get to it right away, at least let us know when you're going to get back with it and where you have to go to get the information and the reason why it's going to take no more than a couple of days to get it turned around.
Except some of these questions are going to be much more than a couple of days.
Well, that's right. But letting us know it's an in-depth deal, but it gives us an idea of what you're dealing with and what you have to do to get the questions answered. So, I'd appreciate that. Anybody else have any questions or comments?
I do.
Susan.
A snort is inappropriate.
I did snort.
I just came back from the International Economic Development Council conference. There's this smaller spring conference in Minneapolis, and I was just looking. Often in our board packets, Ted and staff will include various conferences or educational like that. And this particular conference, their larger fall conference organization is going to be in Fort Worth this October and in Alaska next year. So there's a planning team that's working on making the Alaska conference successful. So just one, want to thank Ada because they helped with the logistics and some of the costs for me to participate. And again, I think it's going to be great. We'll have 1,400, 1,500 people here in Alaska next year. And so one, conferences are a great economic activity, but two, just that kind of focus I think will be good for us. So that's one. Two, I'm going to be in Nome and Unalakleet the week of our board meeting, or the week of our June board meeting. So I'm presently planning on flying up for at least the first day of the meetings that were just discussed in Kotzebue regarding the Ambler project. And I know that the agenda has evolved. I think it'll be valuable, especially with not only my ADA hat, but my community regional affairs hat on. So given the travel logistics, it may be that I'm phoning in to the board meeting on the Thursday because I'm actually going to Unalakleet on Friday. So anyway, I'll work through that.
As long as you have hotel, we're happy.
Yeah. I got family, I know. Anyway, so that's the second thing is just as I think through how to maximize the fact that I'm in that corner of the state, it may be phoning into the board meeting. And then also, I know staff's been working on the logistics for the July meeting in Ketchikan, and I'm looking forward to that. And connected ADA staff with the chamber and the Ketchikan Visitor Bureau. They're excited we're coming, and I don't know if they've had a chance to follow up because they were traveling at the time we did this, but kicked out the idea that there might be a mixer with their boards and the staff, or a presentation or something. And anyway, they wanted to think about that, but they're very excited we're coming to Ketchikan.
I have one last comment, kind of a thank you to ADA. The City Center Wasilla investment, the loan that was made just recently, FAA moved some of their staff out, opened up a new office out there. 10 or 12 employees moved out to Wasilla. So even though it says three, it's actually doubled in size for the jobs that are coming out to the valley. So kind of thank you to ADA, and thank you for the developers moving forward to get that loan. They're filling up the space. So thank you.
Jared?
Thank you. A couple of things, and Dan and I didn't talk, but I did want to ask in regard to answers to my questions. I am interested in getting answers to the gas questions that I asked Mark. And if AOGCC doesn't have an answer, who does? I mean, just those kind of things I would like to know. It's just an itch on my scratch. And maybe it works, and maybe it helps. Maybe
and
not.
We do have our consultants working on that right now with the Department of Revenue.
So I appreciate Dan saying that because I ask the questions because I truly don't understand, and it's just a puzzle that helps me. So thank you for that. Should we think about, in regard to the June meeting, after what we saw today, are we going to have a chock-a-block agenda, depending on what AEA's got? Because I don't want to short shift IEP, and I would just throw it out to all of us, and now Susan's got this, she rightfully does have the conflicts, but we may want to start noon on Wednesday, and or you guys make that call. But I just don't want to get us, because of AEA takes up 2 hours, and then we've got this, and now we're doing a short trip on IEP, and we don't want to do that, because what we saw today, we're in the vortex, folks. So things are going to happen. I just throw that out for you folks to think. And I'm going to just take my, I don't want to go to Friday, because it's Friday in the summer, but I was thinking of Wednesday. Just, I'm going to block out Wednesday, just in case we need it. The other thing is that I'm really comfortably uncomfortable about this whole damn thing with IEP. And as it's always been, there are lots of off-ramps that go into a ditch. And we all know that. I mean, we tell that to ourselves all the time. But I remain comfortable with MWH. I believe them. That they're working hard on our behalf, and I thought today's presentation was working really good. And, so it really just settles me a bit. But at the end of the day, somebody somewhere is going to say, what's it going to cost? Mm-hmm. And we need to have an answer.
Well, I think on that, Gary, almost as important, someone's going to say that I will buy what you are going to do at that cost.
Well, absolutely.
It's ultimately a business decision for the utilities and for Alaska on that.
As it's been since we sanctioned this project 9 months ago, whenever it was, we got involved. It's a matter of managing expectations. And I don't want to drop surprises on people. I'd better let them know that we're going to slip a bit. I'd better let them know that it might not be $15, it might be $16. This is a piece I didn't send to the full board, I sent it to Dana. This was in the Sunday paper, a fellow from the Fairbanks Economic Development Corporation. And it's actually, its essence is that Ada has all the tools, make it work, and you need $15 of them. It's actually a pretty good article, and I called and told them, except for the part where it said, acting as penny bankers bent on maximizing dollar returns to the state treasury. So that kind of got the hair up in the back.
They pointed at me.
They're pointing
at him. Yeah, they didn't even look at you. They looked at me.
So the point being is that these are the things that are happening in Fairbanks, and Susan's there enough to know that this project is expected to go, it's expected to benefit, and it's expected to do that at a certain price. And so I wanted to stay on top of it. I don't want to drop surprises. And if we slip a year, we slip a year. It's just the way it is. I'm done. I just wanted to let
you. I would request the support on the board on this because, again, we have a target audience that is very concerned about their prices. And they say 15. We keep saying that based on a feasibility analysis, not the information that we're getting, that we believe the range is between 14 and 18. And when we say that, the audience that you're discussing or pointing to just go back and states, no, it's 15. You can make it happen at 15. We keep saying we believe there's a range and our goal is to come in with that range, and then we'll get hit with the penny-pinching bankers that you can make it happen at 15.
First time I've ever been accused of being a penny-pinching banker.
and that speaks to the grid about where we put what funds, where we deploy what assets, and how we buy it down to 15 to figure out a way to do it. That's down the pike. But the word is out, and I just would like to extend a hand be on top of it. And today's presentation really helped.
And, Gene already believe I have spoke to our communication teams and spoke to MWH's communication teams. I've directed that they meet by early next week to discuss, you know, taking what we got from MWH and where we're at and going back to the communities and saying, map this out too, of what the board heard to the communities. So, and start laying that groundwork of also like was heard over on this side, on the private side, is that there is responsibility on the utilities part on decisions that, based on what they're willing to commit, that will affect the size of the plant and how much gas is so that, like you said, everyone's brought together and down the path at the same time. So there isn't, like you said, on November 30th, well, gas won't be there till June of 2016. Well, gas will be $18. We'll continue to try to be honest and forthright on the range. And there's always a part where a party does not want to hear what you think that range is, but we're going to be up front. But again, the only thing I was going to say on the Pennington chair is that we have been very forthright with all the groups that our goal is to get the lowest cost gas to Fairbanks. But there are realities, and we're going to try to keep those realities up front too. And that's all I would say on that here. But
there are five shoes that have to drop. And each of those has a cost.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So
You brought up Gene Cario. I guess he's not here. He was going to mention something maybe if there was an issue with the EPA ruling on this carbon emission issue that just came out yesterday, and how it affects this or any of these projects that we're looking at, these energy projects. So maybe, Russell, you can ask him to send a quick note to the board if there's an issue with that.
Okay.
Just that was, he just, you know, the EPA came out with their deal yesterday, just how that affects everybody here.
Is there is, what, there's a coal plant at the university, and there's another one that got potential funding in June's last session, right? And then the Fort Wainwright has one. That could be pretty instrumental in our project.
Yeah, it would help this project. I mean, anything that reduces carbon.
What I'm afraid of is that the interior, and I'm, you know, see what it means, but it could take a $200 million coal plant to the university and make it $500
million.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's, and I don't know what it does with Golden Valley and Healy. What
Healy is going to be challenged with this, according to court.
Yeah.
Because the SCR isn't, if you remember right, Gary, as we talked, and again, not the technical person, didn't really deal with carbon dioxide per se. It was dealing with other impurities. So Corey's saying that there will be an issue to them on a coal plant. That's
you know, Fairbanks burns coal too. So, I mean, there's just a whole bunch of different ramifications.
Aurora Power as well.
That's one. Okay, I think that concludes our agenda. Adjournment. Your motion?
Adjournment.
Second.
Opposed? We're adjourned. Thank you very much, Ted and your staff.
Thank you.
This is my.